It's the JT the Brick Show, broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes up off the middle, and he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 20 years.
Open at the 35, racing to the 20, 10, touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Welcome into the final hour of the show, final hour of the week. What a gorgeous day. And thanks to everybody who was on our YouTube page. I know I don't care what people think. I have to build this YouTube thing. I care what you think, but I want you to be able to watch the show. I want you to be able to see the show. So if you're joining us in this hour, the best way to do it is to just go to YouTube, which you're already on. Everybody's on YouTube. My kids live on YouTube. JT the Brick YT is my own channel. I put this show up there every day, usually about an hour of it, and then I put out some other content and some reels and all that. So thanks for the bricklayers, as we call them, that joined us that first hour of the show. Vic Tafer, what we have lined up, the black hole, as we talked about as I opened up the show. And that's where we'll lead off this hour as we continue on watching the Dodgers parade. And the Dodgers are celebrating. That's what I'm going to remember this week, as I often tell you, I journal a little bit. And I journaled this week about the Yankees. I did a podcast this morning with Tom Looney, JT and Looney, wherever you get your podcast, JT and Looney on any podcast platform. We did a short one, about 20, 25 minutes, wrapping up the Dodgers World Series from my perspective as a Yankee fan, Looney's perspective as a Dodger fan. So please download that and share. And now we'll get ready again for Cincinnati coming up here. As I'm saying a lot this show, is I'm going to look at the Cincinnati game on Sunday, and we got an early pregame show, so everything moves up. The Raiders have to play the way the Jets played last night. I thought the Jets were fantastic last night. This was the way, and this is pre-Devontae, right? Before Devontae got to the Jets and he was here with the Raiders, you know, the Jets couldn't get anything going. So they made a trade to get Devontae Adams, which was, I think, a good move for the Jets. Devontae's a player. He doesn't want to be here anymore. And they went out yesterday, the Jets last night, and beat a really good opponent, 21-13. I mean, the Jets' defense shut out Houston in the first quarter, gave up a touchdown, and then a field goal in the third and fourth. And the Jets scored 14 in the fourth quarter to win 21-13. Aaron Rodgers, 22-32 for only 211 yards, but he had three touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a 118.1 rating. If you would have told me before the game last night that Rodgers would have a 118.1 rating and C.J. Stroud would have a 59.2, hey, man, I'm not saying the party's over with C.J. Stroud. He was 11 for 30. He was sacked eight times. Eight. I mean, no touchdowns, no interceptions. They were god-awful. And Joe Mixon ran it for 106 yards, 4.4 a carry. C.J. Stroud ran it for 7.4 a carry. But the Jets really looked good. They only ran it for 100 yards. Breece Hall had 74, but the leading receiver was Devontae. He had seven receptions for 91 yards and a touchdown. He was targeted 11 times. Garrett Wilson had one of the best catches. I'm looking at it again. The one-handed catch was absolutely brilliant. The one-handed touchdown grab. You got to see it to believe it. I'm sure you saw it by now. It was absolutely incredible. He had two touchdowns. So that team with Breece Hall as a running back healthy, and Devontae and Garrett Wilson is pretty lethal. And the defense is pretty good now because Haason Reddick, who missed most of the season, decided to come back, and he comes back at the right time. Sherwood had two sacks in that game. Quinn and Williams had 1.5 sacks. Solomon Thomas, remember him, Raider Nation, he had a sack in the game. Haason Reddick had half a sack. But it's not about the score and how the Jets won. What I saw with the Jets is what we need to see from the Raiders. They played with a sense of urgency like their season was over, which it might be. They have an 18.6% chance, according to ESPN analytics, to make the playoffs. And they played that way last night. I thought their body language was great. Aaron Rodgers was locked in. Devontae was locked in. So why can't the Raiders do that Sunday in Cincinnati? I'm serious, everybody. It's a big topic for me next week on Monday when I come back and on the postgame show. I watch all that. I watch the clock. I watch the body language. I watch the game with James Jones, Amber Theo Harris, Eric Allen in the facility. We talk about this. So let me leave this week with you as we start this final hour. We're going to get to Rich Gannon, my conversation with him and my coach interview that we did on Wednesday. Very important that the Raiders don't check out, which I don't think they will, They don't need to. Don't think they will before the bye week. A lot of teams before the bye week play great because they're in playoff contention. The Raiders are not. A lot of teams play great before the bye week because they have an earlier bye week and the season's still up for grabs. You know, you get a bye week in week five and you've only played four games, you know, you're in the thing. You get a bye week in week six, and after week six and you're 3-3, you're in it. The Raiders are going into their bye week. They're going to go in there either 3-6 or 2-7. So mentally, every guy, not every guy is going to be on the same page. You would hope, but not every guy is going to be. And we know that Jackson Powers Johnson is going to play. We're waiting for the injury report. We'll get to that over the weekend. He'll play center over Andre James. But my point is, it's going to be evident to everyone in the media, all of our insiders, myself and you, the fans, if the Raiders played extremely hard or not. And they have not given you a reason this season to think that they won't play hard. But this is a massive test because of the bye week. So if this team is down in the second half and we see a couple of Ole tackles, if we see someone not tackling low and tackling high, you know what I'm getting at, it's going to get ugly here on Monday. So they got to play great. They get paid to win these games. They get paid to win a lot of money, and they got to win. And again, I know a lot of Raider fans are checked out on winning now. Not a lot, but some who are loud. And the Raiders have to play this game like it's a playoff game. And the last time they played a playoff game was there, and they lost. So, and they get a chance to go up against Joe Burrow. And beating Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson will be a moral victory. I'm not much into moral victories, but to see this season end at some point and say, you know, Raiders won a bunch of games. They didn't make the playoffs, but they beat Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. That'll be something for Patrick Graham to build on again as we move forward. So a couple of things that I wanted to mention that we talked about. I can't wait to see Max versus Joe Burrow. That's what's going to be my featured matchup here. Max coming off the edge and to see what he's going to be able to do. Burrow's been sacked 19 times this season. And he's been pressured 40 times this season. And Max is a beast in doing what? You know, pressuring the quarterback and making it difficult. Crosby has 3 pass deflections this season. Keep your hands up. Get your hands up. Get your hands up. Crosby has 17 pressures on the year. So I like that matchup a lot. The other marquee matchup that Eric Allen's all excited about is Jakorian Bennett versus Ja'Marr Chase. Bennett has allowed only 115 yards receiving on 14 receptions. Wow. How about that? That is a huge big-time positive. We've been so negative. The conversation nationally and locally has been so negative with the Raiders' record. How about a pat on the back for Jakorian Bennett? He's allowed just a 40% completion rate here. But Chase is a different story. He's got 302 yards after the catch. That's 4th in the league. So he's big and strong. He's a kind of a morph between, as I said earlier this week, Terrell Owens and Randy Moss. He's big. He's tall. He can make plays. But after he catches those slants over the middle of the field, he takes off, man, and he is tough to bring down. Isaiah Polamalu is a pretty good tackler. He's going to have to do a good job, and we're going to have to see a good game out of Trayvon Merrick. These guys are going to have to tackle Ja'Marr Chase as he's running around. I mean, I can't believe I'm looking at the number here. Cincinnati opened up a 7.5-point spread. They're a touchdown favorite over the Raiders, and the Raiders did a backdoor cover against Kansas City and lost the game. So Jakorian Bennett is going to have to play great, and he's got a nice streak going. Jakorian hasn't given up a touchdown this season, and they're going after him. We'll see what's going to happen in the season series here. Las Vegas leads Cincinnati 21-13 all time. The last 3 games, the Bengals have won 2 of them. Raiders last played the Bengals twice during the 2021 season. Raiders lost 32-13 in the regular season, then lost a wild card game 26-19. Right? 26-19, a game they could have won with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. The Raiders have not beaten the Bengals in Cincinnati since 1995. I started with the Raiders in 1998. Do the math. Go get a win in Cincinnati. Come on. What is this? And the Raiders have not won, of the Bengals, excuse me, have not won a home game this season. That doesn't motivate you. They haven't won a home game this year. The Bengals haven't won at home. That's hard to believe. As we mentioned in the first hour with Vic, and we'll say it again, getting Brock Bowers going is everything in this game. Bowers went 39 minutes without being targeted. I think that is a failure to Brock Bowers by everyone involved, the quarterback, the coaches. For Brock Bowers to go 39 minutes without being targeted means that they didn't focus on Brock Bowers enough. How did that drop through preparation? I don't know. How did that slip through the cracks? He can't this week. He can't. That's all the media talked about this week is where the hell was Brock after his first three receptions that led to first downs. In the fourth quarter, Bowers had two receptions for 19 yards. Brock averaged 11.6 yards per reception. Brock has seven red zone targets, but no red zone touchdowns this year. Wow. I mean, that is just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So as you know, going back, Coach Pierce had two press conferences. He had one today. On the one that he had on Monday, he still said he wants to identify with a physical running game as a running team. I disagree. They tried to. He still wants to identify with that. He's the head coach. He rules. I'm just a talk show host. But I think this team continues to try to run at a cost that costs this team games. And how much longer are you going to run it into the pile? Now, they're running it less. That means less runs into the pile. But they got to run it a little bit here. But I don't know. I don't expect anything in this running game. I don't. And that's hard for me to say because normally a running offensive line figures it out and they have a good game or two. We just haven't seen it here. Raiders are averaging 3.6 yards per rush attempt. That's awful. The Raiders' rushing offense is ranked 31st, second to last. They're only averaging 79 yards a game. This is a professional football team that can't run the ball for 80 yards. That's horrible. How they got here? Injuries to the offensive line and the fact that maybe the offensive line isn't that good because they're getting bull rushed and pushed back. The Raiders' passing offense is ranked 18th. That's 209 yards per game passing. We're talking about an NFL team that throws it for 209 and rushes for 79 a ball game. How did this happen? How did this happen? Again, injuries. I think the play calling hasn't been good. Michael Mayer not being available and Devontae being traded and Jacoby Myers being hurt, playing hurt for a while, right? And we can't get the ball deep to Trey Tucker and DJ Turner, which is a problem. There's a lot of problems here, right? I want to be positive here. I thought, you know, the Raiders could be 6-2 heading into this game, but they're 2-6. Now, the good news is the Bengals are awful on third down in red zone defense. Bengals' third down defense is ranked 26th. So on third down, you can pick up first downs on the Bengals if you run decisive routes and you get the ball to someone who's open. I would presume that would be Brock Bowers. This is the worst third down defense the Bengals have had since 2019. So they know it's a big problem. They can't clean it up, so the Raiders should attack because the Bengals' red zone defense is ranked 27th overall in the league. 27th. And last week, the Bengals allowed the Eagles to score three red zone touchdowns, and they got blown out 37-14. But it's going to come down to the Bengals' explosive offense. Joe Burrow is ranked in the top 10 for yards, touchdowns, interceptions, and completion percentage. Ja'Marr Chase is ranked number one in receiving yards at 674 and touchdowns at 7. And we're waiting on the T. Higgins decision with the quad. But he has the second most receiving yards on the Bengals. So as I sit here on Friday, and, you know, we're looking at Friday here and we're cruising on, the matchup predictor at ESPN.com gives the Bengals a 64% chance to win the game to the Raiders 35.7. I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't agree with that. But we know that Andre James is out. Zamir White is questionable, right? Harrison Bryant, I don't expect him to play, questionable. Robert Spillane, what a warrior. We spent a lot of time talking about him. Doubtful, which means they're probably not going to play, would be Orlando Brown, the offensive tackle, and T. Higgins, both doubtful. Charlie Jones, the wide receiver, is questionable. The safety, Geno Stone. And Sam Hubbard, the defensive end, is questionable there. So I'll wait for the new injury report to come out over the weekend, and we'll see what's going to happen there. But that's where we stand. Cincinnati is 3-5, 3-5 on the year. If they lose, they're done. So let's just say this. A lot of people think the Raiders are done. You can figure that out on your own. I never quit. But if the Bengals lose their fifth home game of the year, they're finished. And they will unravel They're going to lose their minds because they got big ego guys on their team. They're two games back of Baltimore, and they're three games back of Pittsburgh. So if Cincinnati wins, they're 4-5. They have life. They have life, and they can go on a run similar to the Jets. Remember, the Jets are now 3-6, and they have life. If the Bengals beat the Raiders, they'll have a better record than the Jets and be ahead of the Jets. And in the AFC West, it's tough. The Raiders are three games back of the Chargers. All the other teams in our division, other than the Raiders, are above 500. The Chargers are 4-3. Denver's 5-3. How the hell is Denver 5-3? And Kansas City is undefeated 7-0, and they get another break this week. My head's going to explode looking at the standings in the AFC West. This did not need to happen. All right, when we come back, we'll have Antonio Pierce, my conversation with him. He's a Dodger fan. A Dodger parade going on. Man, it looks gorgeous in Los Angeles. I went to game one a week ago this Friday. I was off the air, and I was in L.A. for game one. Freddie Freeman hit a grand slam walk-off in the bottom of the 10th. Man, that feels like a lifetime ago for me, man. I had a rough week in sports, man. And I hope this drought that I'm on comes to an end in Cincinnati. Let's keep the show going. Brought to you by Virgin Hotels. F1 is right around the corner, and a big home base is Virgin Hotels.
Dave Roberts can hardly watch. Here's the 1-2 pitch from Buehler. Got him swinging! That's it! It's a World Series win for LA! They've done it! They finished the job and give Los Angeles the parade it's been waiting for! A swarm of Dodgers on the right side of the infield. Grown men but children again. Living out their dream.
JT, welcome back here as we continue on. Dodgers Radio, Dodgers win the World Series. As we wrap up this Friday, Bobby and I told them I want to hear that one more time. It pains me as a Yankee fan. It pains me. But we're going to play Coach Pierce's interview with me like we do every Friday or most Fridays here. And he's a Dodger fan. We were able to talk about that a little bit. He's a bigger, it seems to me, I don't know for sure, he's a huge Laker fan. But no doubt a Dodger fan. We were able to have some small talk about that. Dodger parade. So after the Dodgers won, they torched a bus. A very graphic video. I don't know if you saw it. Bobby and I looked at it. A Dodger fan, I think, blew out his hand on a firework. There's a really big, big video of a Dodger fan going out into the middle of a street with a pretty big firework that ended badly. Badly. So it's not for kids to see and all that, but then they torch a bus. I mean, a big bus, like not a short bus. You know, the ones that have the two levels to it, and they burn that to the ground. Fireworks galore. Fireworks galore there. But as we're watching the parade, when I came in, you know, we're talking an hour plus ago, 2 hours when I was home, they were getting ready for the parade. We have ABC7 in Los Angeles, part of our TV package, whatever I'm paying for it. And we were watching that because I lived in L.A. for 10 years, so my wife and I know the newscasters, the sportscasters. So they got a gorgeous day like we do today in L.A., and they're having that parade. And the parade's going to go around in that part of L.A., and then they're going to put, I think, 56,000 Dodger fans in there. L.A. does parades well, I have to say. Some parades are bigger. When Detroit won the Stanley Cup, they had 1 million people. The duck boat parades when Brady was winning. The biggest parades of all time are the Canyon of Heroes because it's the Canyon of Heroes in Lower Manhattan with the ticket tape parades. Those were great. But, man, L.A., when they're winning, they know how to do parades. The Warriors had great parades. Also, back in the day, if you're a Warrior fan and you're up there in Oakland for those parades, those were pretty amazing, too. But back to Coach Pierce, as he spoke earlier today, we played a little bit of that in the monologue. And now it's getting interesting because he's going in front of the microphone just with me one-on-one, but he's going up against or going in front of the media there, and it's the same old thing. He comes in that room with high energy, and he's got to talk about why they're losing 4 in a row, what it's going to take to win, and it's tough. This is not easy for him to do, and I think he does that well. He gives everybody the sense of, we're going to win, we got energy, Look, I know a lot of fans don't want to hear we're going to clean it up and fix it. I get to the point where I don't want to hear we're going to clean it up and fix it. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be cleaned up in Costa Mesa in training camp. It's got to be ready for the start of the season. But with the injuries, Jackson Powers Johnson playing center. I want Andre James to be healthy. He's a good guy. Was great to my son when he met him the first time. I like Andre a lot, but I want to see JPJ in the center role. So a lot of things have changed now with this injury report, but we go back to Wednesday, my conversation with the head coach, Antonio Pierce. Head coach Antonio Pierce joins us. Coach, let's begin. You had a 10-7 lead against Kansas City. Things were working out well. What'd you see at that point and then after halftime?
Yeah, I think, you know, just opportunities there, right? Really go to the third quarter where we had that sequence of plays with the we kicked off to him, got him pinned inside the 15, got a couple penalties, got the interception, and there's an opportunity there. The ball's on the 3-yard line. Got to find a way to punch it in. We did not. And then you can feel the game, and obviously another turnover there to end it. And at that point, you know, we're fighting for our lives. But I love the fight. I love the competitiveness. I love the effort that we gave. Again, it's going to come down to execution. Take care of the football. Better in the penalty situation. I thought we had a good idea and a good plan in a run game defensively. Got to do a better job with Kelce early on in the game. I thought we got him going too early, and especially in that first half, let him off the hook a couple times.
I want to get to the Spillane injury. I was in the stands at that point, and when he came to the sidelines, I thought he was done. Yep. I mean, he couldn't put pressure on his leg. He goes into the tent and comes out, and he's out there again. Can you take us through his warrior aspect and how he was able to play after that?
I'll tell you what, man. You talk about a guy, I keep saying that, loves football.
Yeah.
Like, loves the game. And I went to him right after I got the blue tent. He was sitting there, and I'm kind of like, you know, I was checking him out, and he's like, I'm good. I said, you sure? He's like, man, I'm good. AP, I'm not missing this one. And for him to go out there, and regardless of how he finished playing statistically or how it looked on film, that's the mindset, and that's the fight, and that's what we talk about in our meeting rooms, of just continue to battle, man. Give your team each and everything that you have, leaving the gas tank empty, and he did that on Sunday.
What'd you see with Trayvon Merrick coming into the box, tackling? He gets the tipped interception, almost got in the end zone there. A lot of fight from him, too.
Yeah, I think Trayvon, you know, quietly kept, is really having a really good season. I think 2 interceptions on the season. Closer to the box he gets, the more plays he's making, especially on the other side line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage. Being more vocal again, we talked about the loss a couple weeks ago with Marcus Epps, but I think just his role has expanded more and more. Patrick Graham getting him more involved, either in pressures or down the box, disguising. He's a physical player who now in year 4 is really coming to his own.
Let's stay on that with Epps gone. You told me a lot that they're like twins. They're with each other all the time. How is he handling without that? We haven't heard much from Epps since the injury, and how Trayvon's becoming even a bigger leader.
Yeah, I think Epps, he's coming along well. Obviously, he had surgery. Wishing him the best going forward. I think with Trayvon, I think what he really understood now that he has to be that vocal leader. He has to be the centerpiece of the back end. Spill controls the front. We need that extra tentacle in the back end to get, you know, our corners, you know, Nate Hobbs at star, all aligned. And he's playing with a guy in his first time starting a lot of games, in Isaiah Palomao, who's playing really well as well. I think our safeties combined, the core of those two guys, their tackling, the ability to make plays in space, I think has really shown up for us.
Brock leads the league in receptions, but I know you're trying to get him in the end zone. So what can change here in the red zone with him, getting him in motion? We know everybody's keeping an eye on him, but that's got to be frustrating knowing that he can do it from the 20. Get him open.
Yeah, you got to move him around, got to put him in different positions, and then they give him a shot. It doesn't matter if they have eyes on him. He's better than most of the guys he's going against, and we've seen that. I mean, we could throw up against the ball against that number one corner on our sideline, and he goes up there and, you know, he mosses him, right? Top hat, and makes the play. The physicality, I mean, hell, he knocked out another corner by how he's running after the ball, which we talked about. So just, we got to be more creative of moving him around. Hell, put him at the backfield. I don't care. At this point, we need to score touchdowns because we're down there too many times too often and they're not putting points on the board.
What's going on with your quarterback decision this week with the two quarterbacks that you'll have up ready to go?
Yeah, they'll both get reps this week in practice, and, you know, Gardner will start, and we'll see what happens after that.
We'll go to the other quarterback, Joe Burrow. He's something. They haven't won at home this year, which is kind of shocking for them because they were, you know, predicted to be a Super Bowl contender here, but this is kind of a do-or-die game for them. And the quarterback, when he's healthy and has protection, he's lethal.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch him, don't look at the record.
Yeah.
Look at Jamar Chase. When T. Higgins is out there, and then you look at this quarterback standing in there, he's getting hit. He's got pressure consistently. He doesn't flinch, doesn't blink, making big-time throws. And, hell, now you're watching him on third and whatever, 15 plus, and he runs for a 50-yard touchdown. So he's doing everything he can to help his team and willing them to victories. And it's going to be a tough matchup. Obviously, we know they're struggling at home, but that doesn't really matter. We got to handle our business on the road.
Eric Allen talks about the maturation of Jakorian Bennett and his stats and way he looks now. Now you got Chase. You feel comfortable if he's on Jack's side or your young player's side, number zero, that they can handle him, especially with his speed and ability to run after the catch.
Yeah, I mean, Jamar Chase is elite. When you really watch him on film now, forget the record, and I know he's got, I think he's number one in targets and receptions and all these other numbers, but it shows up on film. His ability to gain yards after the catch, after contact, the ability to make those contested one-on-one completions, and then just, I mean, I think just overall a good football player. And obviously, all hands, it doesn't matter if it's JB, Jack, you know, they put him inside and he's on Nate Hobbs. We got to have eyes on him. We got to disrupt him. But more importantly, we got to disrupt the quarterback so they don't have that time in as well.
Trey Hendrickson's a hell of a player, and similar stats to Max every year. I think Max, what's different with Max is, you know, he doesn't come out of the game. A lot of these other guys will come out for a breather. He could be a beast in trouble here. You just came off Jones from Kansas City. What do you do to limit him?
Yeah, another game record. Got to keep our eyes and hands on him. You know, he's on demand, too. We can't allow these one-on-one matchups. I thought, going back to last week, I thought we did a decent job on Chris Jones, especially in passing downs. And he's always going to find a way. Good players find a way to be disruptive at certain times in the game. But we got to do the same thing with 91. I mean, we see that every day in practice from Max. So that's a good part about our offensive line. They see it. They know what it looks like. Now we just got to get, you know, a couple more sets of hands and eyes on them and obviously get the ball out.
That's a good segue to what I wanted to ask you about the offensive line. With the injuries, we wait for the injury report to come out and inactives on game day. With the guys who have been out then coming back in again, do you feel like the chemistry, you're getting used to different pairings and seeing what you like?
You don't want that at O-line.
No, you
don't want to be playing mix and match and who's in, who's at center, who's at guard. I mean, we've been doing that all year and no excuse. I mean, there's nothing we can do. It's the nature of the beast with injuries. And I would say this, we're getting a lot of good play from our younger guys. You know, there's mistakes there, of course. But you got to keep finding a way to get the best five guys and get them to play in consecutive weeks. Not even in weeks, but just how about in practice? You know, there's too often, even throughout the week, we don't have an opportunity to go over our same five guys Wednesday through Friday. And again, not trying to feel sorry for us. It's the nature of the beast. Yeah. But that's something we're battling with, and to those players' credits, they're doing their best they can.
And you preach the physicality, what you want from them. They all get that, too, as you try to get this running game going every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to change. I mean, I've said that's our DNA, that's our identity, that's what I want us to look like. When we got the ball, you know, 6 inches from the goal line, we're going to run the ball. We're not going to throw it. It's man up. That's the name of the game, physical football. And we're going to go at it again this week and keep preaching on the run game and get that thing going.
We're going to talk to you after the bye week. Obviously, we're focused on this game. Then we have a bye week and then Miami there. So just your message to the fans as they'll talk to you after the bye week, the struggle with the record, but the fight and the will that this team has.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can question our effort, our fight, how competitive we are, you know, the togetherness. I mean, there's a lot of people poking holes in the armor right now, and guys are not flinching and blinking. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. We get it with our record being 2-6, not what we expected. But I think when you watch us play, regardless of how ugly it is at certain points of the game, you know, in the fourth quarter, we're giving ourselves a chance to either tie it up or win it. And we've had those opportunities. And we're going to keep fighting. We're going out to work each and every week because we get paid for 17 weeks. And until this bad boy's over at the end of the season, they're going to get our best effort.
Good luck, Coach.
Thank you.
All right, so we appreciate that conversation I get with him. I get anywhere from 8 to 10 minutes with him, and then he goes downstairs and meets the media. And you know, as I talk to him, a lot of this week's been about, can we get Brock Bowers the ball more? We address that in a respectable fashion. How do you get the ball to Brock? What do you got to do? I think they were close. They tried to run a play for him that got blown up on that fourth down play where Brock was open. And I don't know what Gardner Minshew was thinking at that time to take that sack. I do not know what Gardner Minshew was thinking on that fourth down when they had first and goal at the 3, then they got down to the 1, and then they couldn't get it in. And what Gardner was doing on that last play, I just don't know why, everybody, the play call isn't coming in really firm. We're going to Brock in the red zone. That's it. What else am I complaining about this week? I don't think anything. The only thing I pushed this week was get Brock the ball, get it to him in the red zone, and make a firm, decisive decision to go to him. Don't look at him and go off of him. Stay with him, and if it's double coverage and you just can't get it in, all right, we can live with that. I haven't seen that yet this year. Have you seen a point this year where Brock Bowers on the tape, and I watched the 22 where he's double covered and they can't get him the ball? No, I've seen they're not able to pass protect. I see that they're not even looking at him, if they want to try to force the run. But this is the week in Cincinnati. I don't want to go back to Darren Waller in the playoffs, first and goal at the 9, where they refused to get him the ball 4 times in a row. Can't happen here in Cincinnati. In the red zone on Sunday, I want to see Brock getting targets and a touchdown. No more of this, he leads the league in receptions and doesn't have a touchdown. This is getting weird. Get him the ball, get him a touchdown, give him a game ball. Let's get Brock Bowers going. When we come back, my conversation with Rich Gannon as we continue here Friday. Dodger Parade on as I'm watching here. The Jets won last night. That should be a wake-up call for the Raiders, as I said in the first hour of the show. Rich Gannon with his opinion on why this offense can't get going and what he sees. We do that every other week here. That's coming up next as we continue. Brought to you by Alex and Orlando de Castaverde. The brothers win. The brothers have your back. Brotherswin.com. Put their number in your phone in case you get into an accident. 702-222-9999. Raider Nation Radio as we wrap up our week on a Friday. All right, welcome back to Raider Nation Radio. JT with you. Before we get to Rich Gannon, you know, we're going to see what's happening. I see a big story here from The Athletic. We had Vic Taffer on in the first hour, and he mentioned it a bit. I want to say it again, why the Raiders are expected to stand pat at the NFL trade deadline. If you have a Athletic subscription, you saw it already, but what are they going to do here now as they trail significantly behind Kansas City, Denver, and the Chargers? Barring a miracle turnaround, as Vic wrote, the Raiders won't sniff the playoffs this season. So what should they do? What should they do around the trade deadline? We discussed that earlier. If you want to read that, it's at The Athletic. So every Monday, first thing I do after I wrap up Sunday, my long day, is I'm back in the building with Rich Gannon. And we do this for the Raiders roundtable. It's Eric Allen and myself. And we get about 12 or 15 minutes with Rich Gannon. I believe it's the best thing we do. I do. I believe it's the best thing, and we put out a lot of content all week with a lot of good guests, but, you know, this sometimes things change, like the week that Devontae got traded, we made that clear, but I think it's important to hear Rich Gannon and what he thinks, the former MVP, about the struggles of the Silver and Black on offense.
Each week we're joined by our MVP, Rich Gannon. Now, Rich, I want to begin big picture from you on the overall game, especially the struggles in the red zone where the Raiders had 7 opportunities from the 4-yard line in. What'd you see?
Well, JT, I think it really gets back to a lot of different things. I think first and foremost, it gets back to scheming. Like, what is your personality down that part of the field? I think you have to look at matchups. What are we seeing from a defensive perspective? Are we seeing a 6-2 goal line defense? Are we seeing a base defense? Are we seeing a defense with bigger edges? Are we seeing a defense where they're bringing in some bigger bodies in the secondary? What are our best matchups? You know, what I'm seeing through the first half of the season, and not just with the Raiders, this is around the National Football League, there are a number of teams, and quite frankly, too many, that aren't very good in short yardage and goal line situations. You look at the games yesterday, you've got 3rd-and-1 situations. The Jets are in the gun with Aaron Rodgers, and they hand it off, and they lose a half a yard. You know, you look at teams that had a 4th-and-2, and they're throwing a wide flare to a back, and they're getting tackled in the backfield for a loss of 3. You know, you have to have a personality that you play to. And I think, you know, when I was with the Raiders, we did have a personality in short yards and goal line. We were the best short yards and goal line team in the NFL, and it wasn't even close. We had big bodies up front. We got bigger reinforcements on the edges. We brought in extra linemen. We had Zach Crockett. We had a big fullback in John Ritchie. And we had a quarterback that had no problem handing the football off. And we had a play caller that was determined to score points and not settle for field goals. And I just think that, you know, we've gotten away from that. We get in the gun. It drives me crazy when I see a team that has 3rd-and-a-half a yard or 4th-and-a-half a yard, and they get in gun, they snap the ball backwards 5 yards to try and gain a foot or a foot and a half. Look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They've got that brotherly shove. You know, they got a quarterback that can squat 600 pounds. They get in that formation. They win at the line of scrimmage. They get the backs and tight ends to push the quarterback forward. There's different ways to do it. But I just don't know that the Raiders really have a plan. And you just can't keep dialing up plays and hope they work. You know, we've seen this now. And look, the Raiders had a chance yesterday. I mean, I think the interception in the red zone and to come away with no points – was really, in my opinion, the turning point in that game. They had an opportunity to get right back in this thing, and because they couldn't convert, red zone has been a real issue so far this season for the Raiders. Turnovers in that part of the field and a lack of execution has really been a huge issue that needs to get corrected here in the second half of the season.
You guys, from a defensive standpoint, red zone, it used to take me a whole day. Like Friday, the whole day, you would focus on the opponent's red zone plays. That's how extensive red zone is. And going back to the days with Rich and those guys, man, that was just a really difficult matchup because they brought in different bodies like Rich is talking about. So do you see this football team having difficulties because of the personnel, Rich, or because they're not spending enough time on the red zone because there's so many other things to need to worry about as far as fixing the run, you know, quality passing game? Why don't you think that package, that red zone package, is not thorough at this moment?
You know, EA, you get what you emphasize in this business, right? And if it's a point of emphasis, it's something you work on all the time, you get better at it, right? And I think when we've had issues in the red zone in the past, rather than wait till Friday to install it, we did it on Thursday. When we were having issues in that part of the field, we moved it up a day. You know, we spent a period on Thursday to make sure that we were all on the same page. I think, you know, one of the things is when you have an issue as a football team, your head coach has to fix it. Even if he comes from the defensive side of the ball or what, he's got to be able to go in that offensive meeting room and sit down with Luke Getsy and the offensive staff and get it fixed. And that has to happen. And I think, you know, you look at what they're doing and you say to yourself, like, what are they trying to accomplish? You know, are we trying to trick them in that part of the field, or are we trying to be the more physical team in that part of the field? My sense is, and again, I'm not in these meetings, but my sense is they don't think they can out-physical somebody down there in terms of with what they have with their personnel. I mean, look at the running game yesterday. You know, you got a back, an Alexander Mattison, that's capable of knocking some people backwards. He is. I'm just telling you. I've seen enough of his body of work. I watch him do it in Minnesota. And when he gets a head of steam, he can knock you backwards. He had 14 carries yesterday for 15 yards. Too often, he's getting the ball and he's getting hit at or around the line of scrimmage, and sometimes in the backfield. They're not winning at the line of scrimmage. You have to win at the point of attack. And I just think that's part of it. And I think when they're not able to run the ball and they get down in the red zone, if they can't run it out in the field, it gets tighter and more congested in that part of the field, so they don't even try and run it down there. They try and trick you. They try and get on the perimeter with the receivers on these end arounds and these speed reverses, and they try and throw it down there, and that's a problem. It limits what you can do. Teams know they're not going to run it down there. Teams know they're not going to pack you in and knock you backwards, and so they're adjusting their scheme as well, and it makes it all that much more difficult.
That is incredible analysis.
That is.
That's exactly what's going on,
right?
Because I don't think they have a vision. When they come to the running game, they can't run it all year, period. Mm-hmm. They don't have the personnel. The offensive line's getting blown up, and they insist on doing it. So you mentioned the amount of carries for Jess Madison and how they couldn't run the ball yesterday. You take maybe five of those runs away where nothing happened, and you give Bowers 4 to 5 more targets in a game where he starts off aggressive. I think his first three catches were first downs. He disappears. He disappears from the second quarter into the fourth quarter as the team has an opportunity to win this game. We were there. They were in that game. They had the chance to win the game, not keep it close. And then the running to just try to continue to do something, Rich, that's not working. As Bowers is out there having a good start to the game, I really thought that cost the Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, he has 5 catches in the game. It just seemed like all of them came in the first quarter. You know, a couple of things with Bowers. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, and I just think that teams aren't asleep at the wheel either now. You know, Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense, they know who he is. They know that that's the number one target. And so, you know, you're going to start to see some different things with respect to how they defend him. But, you know, I just think that, when you look at what they're doing right now, I think there's some issues with the personnel. I think the offensive line hasn't been great in the running game. I think there's some limitations in terms of protection. I think it was great to get Jacoby Myers back. He made an immediate impact in that game yesterday. He's certainly coming off of what he did last week. He had 6 catches. But and here's the crazy thing. The Chiefs aren't even that great. I mean, the Chiefs have their own issues.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that they're 7-0 and they're winning with, now Mahomes played a little bit better yesterday. Kelsey had 10 catches, but they have their own issues, right? The tackles are a liability. Mahomes is having to make do. They're banged up at wide receiver. They brought in DeAndre Hopkins. He didn't do anything yesterday in that game. So they're relying on their defense, and they're relying on a quarterback that knows how to get you to the finish line, and they're winning ugly. And I thought that the Raiders had a real opportunity in that game to beat the Chiefs and to really maybe turn this season around. And I just thought they let an opportunity slip away yesterday.
Yeah, I did too. And I think whenever the Raiders are a good football team on the football field, it all comes down to the dominance of the offensive line. But what is a great surprise, Jakobi Meyers, I thought played really well and thought he would be an impact player throughout the whole game. Did a great job with some runs after the catch. And I thought, you know, maybe there's a possibility of him getting more opportunities if they continue to kind of go Brock a couple plays. And then Jakobi, talk to us a little about how you thought Jakobi played yesterday.
Yeah, Eric, I really have liked him for a long time. Even going back to his earlier days in New England, he's got the length you love at that position. I think he does a good job separating. He's got good hands. He's ultra competitive, and he's great in the locker room. Players love him. You know, he made a comment to me in the preseason about Gardner Minshew and the quarterback situation, Aiden O'Connell, however it was going to work out. And he said, you know what, it really doesn't matter. He says, we have to make whichever quarterback comes into that huddle comfortable. I thought that was an interesting thing to say, you know, have a veteran player. So we have to make them comfortable. We have to win on the edges. We've got to do a good job up front. We've got to give them extra time. I just think that, you know, that says a lot about the type of player, the type of leader he is with the Raiders. So I think it's great getting him back. I think those younger receivers have to step up. You know, we need more weapons, right? We need more players to make plays after the catch. You know, I thought Gardner Minshew yesterday played pretty well. He was 24-30, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns. He didn't throw the interception, did have the 1 fumble. But, you know, he's competitive. He's going to give you what he has. But they have to help him in the running game. I mean, 21 carries for 33 yards yesterday, guys, that's just awful. I mean, that's as bad as there is right now in the NFL. They're averaging 1.6 yards per carry. You can't do it. You can't be one-dimensional. And they're not good enough in the passing game right now with Minshew and the receivers that they have. You can't just drop back even though I'd like to tell you to do it, throw it to Bowers every play. You know, they got coaches that are getting paid on that side of the ball as well. So somebody has to step up and make some plays. So, look, this is not an easy spot for Luke Getsy as he's calling plays, trying to figure out who's gonna be the guy that can make some plays this week. I think when you look at their personnel across the board, you know, it's from a personnel standpoint, it's not a top 10 offense, right? It's not, you know, and I think you have to find ways to manufacture some offense. But what's disturbing to me is situationally they haven't been very good. Yeah. And one of the things we started this block with was the red zone and short yards and goal line. They've got to get that addressed. Too many games are being lost right now in the NFL because you can't convert on 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2 or 4th and a half a yard down inside the red zone. And the best team, the field shrinks down in that part of the field. Things happen quicker in that part of the field. Right. And that's where the Raiders have been very deficient here through the first half of the season.
You made an interesting point about the run game. And I felt at some points you guys utilized a short passing game to kind of help, you know, you guys kind of get started and get into that 3rd and short. Is that something that they can do, use the short passing game maybe to help them because they're not running the ball well, so that can kind of put them in manageable situations on 3rd down?
Absolutely, EA. I mean, the quick throws, the bubble screens, the screens to the back. I think they're just being a little bit more innovative. I think understanding, okay, who we are. First of all, you have to come to the conclusion, like, this is who we are as a football team. This is the personnel we have to work with. Like we're not going to get 10 great players. Tom Telesco's not going to make trades here the next, you know, week and get us 2 more receivers and 2 running backs and another couple offense. It's just not going to happen. So let's see who we have. What do they do well? What don't they do well? How can we help the right tackle? Whatever we have to do. And I think that's where Luke Getsy needs to be better. Like, we have to understand, like, who do we have to work with? Let's build game plans around what they do well. Let's change the launch point for a quarterback that's not very tall and isn't great functioning from the pocket. Like, let's find ways that we can take some pressure off of him. Let's find some ways where we can get in manageable situations and not get behind it in the down and distance. So you're right, EA. It's like, the quick game, the short game, the screen game, all those things that can help us be more effective and more efficient as an offense.
Rich, thanks as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday.
You guys are the best.
How good is that? Thanks to Rich again. And we're going to do it again. We're not doing it this Monday. I don't believe we're doing it this Monday. We're on bye week. So I'm going to do radio Monday. So, yes, Bobby, as Bobby's reminded me as we're live here, on Monday, I'm going to come in and do live radio Monday, my live show down at Wynn, and then I'm on the red eye to Florida for the week. I'm going to see my mom and dad. My mom turns 85 on November 8th, and that's a big moment in our lives. My sisters are going to be down there. It's going to be unbelievable. So we'll be down in Naples, Florida for a week. My sons are back here at the house with the dog. Everything's cool and groovy, but I can't wait. They're going to play some golf. My dad's 86 years old, and he's still playing 18 holes twice a week. I mean, I'm pretty happy about that. We might get in a 9 when I land there, but it's nice to just sit in a golf cart, man. I mean, I don't want to get emotional, but to sit in a golf cart with my dad, man, that's the rest of my life now. As long as I get to do that, I'm going to be doing it. But we get one bye week, and then after the bye week, as we talked with Mark Jones, I'm heading to Miami, and we got a big event at the Clevelander that I'm going to be a part of. Old School Brick House Promotion, as we'll be down there. So thanks again to Rich Gannon for joining us. So as we wrap this up, I usually thank all of our proud partners. I think we did a good job with them this week. Next week, we'll have some specialty programming. I think on Tuesday through Friday, there'll be an hour-long interview that the Raiders did with Tim Brown. There'll be some Eddie Pascal content here. Bobby will put some stuff together and whatever Q decides to do. But I'm not tapping out. I'm just taking the bye week, which is what we do every year here. And then the following week, we'll get ready for Miami. The last thing, and this is one more thing I want to leave you on this week here, is that the Jets won last night, and they had the same record as the Raiders today, 2-6. Now the Jets are 3-6. The Jets played with a sense of urgency. Devontae played well. Wilson had that one-handed catch. And the Jets, their body language, if you watch the game, they were up on the sideline. This has to happen for the Raiders. The Raiders, all they have to do is take the blueprint of the Jets last night. Jets season looked to be done, finished, and they said no. And the Jets schedule is so much easier than the Raiders. It's ridiculous how easy it is. I mean, it's freaking ridiculous. And the Raiders got to go through a gauntlet. But the Jets played like their season was on the line. Let's get the Raiders to play like the season is on the line. Depending on where you think the season is, Mark Davis, Tom Telesco, Antonio Pierce want to win. Max wants to win. So for the fans who don't want to win, too bad. I'm blocking you out. I want to win, and I want to beat Cincinnati. It would be a great win to beat Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson in the same season. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. Q's up next with a big show. Enjoy the rest of your Friday.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.